Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. Welcome to the madness in March, everybody. 4 weeks of college basketball fever. On the men's side, your favorites to win are Houston, defending champion UConn, Purdue, who's choked each of the last 3 years. So many options on the table. On the epic women's side of the bracket, Iowa's your betting favorite. South Carolina's the undefeated champion. The big three of Angel Reese, Haley Van Lith, and Morrow at LSU. Juju Watkins and USC. Tara Vanderveer's Stanford team. So many teams on the table. And if you want to bet on any and all of them, BetOnline Sportsbook has you covered before the big dance. Use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the link in the description to this episode. Click on that link in the description to this episode. Bet online, where the game starts. However, and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping on into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy podcast, live on the Believe Podcast Network. Except it isn't live because it is, as always, a podcast, and live in the midst of College Basketball Thursday and Friday of March Madness. There are 32 goddamn basketball games getting ready to play between right now when we're recording and when we get off this podcast at 10 o'clock p.m. on Friday night. 16 men's games, 16 women's games. It's the most wild and stupid day of the college basketball season, despite the fact that of the 4 years now that we've been doing college basketball coverage here on this show, because the first year that we did the Take It Easy podcast was the year that the pandemic shut down the college basketball world. So we didn't have a March Madness until like almost 2 years into doing this podcast. In the 4 years that we've done it, this is the year that I've probably engaged the least with college basketball, and yet my bracket is 75% correct, despite the fact that we made the ultimate vibes pick and picked Long Beach State over Arizona in our March Madness pool, even though we got Long Beach State wrong, which, by the way, shout out to you, Long Beach State, the Triores, and your head coach, Dan Monson, who got fired by the athletic director at Long Beach, who had the gall to say that he purposely fired the coach to try and inspire a team's win in a team's run to the Big West Tournament Championship. The gall of that man to say that this was all part of his convoluted plan is absolutely incredible, and I love that so much for him. I bring all that up to say that even though we picked Long Beach State to win on the first day, our bracket still nailed 12 of the 16 picks, including Oakland and NC State, both winning in the first round. Shout out to us for picking both of those to happen. If you listened to us talk to Razor Rosenthal on Wednesday about our March Madness bracket breakdown, we said if any three seed's going to pull off the upset, it's probably going to be Oakland. And guess what? That's exactly what ended up happening. Oakland beat Kentucky, just like we projected and prognosticated might happen. So even though I have checked out of March Madness, I've checked out of men's college basketball for most of the season, or at least less than we've ever done before, we still kicked ass on the first day of our bracket pool. The women's tournament just tipped off. We got Ohio State playing right now. We got Texas getting ready to tip off, two teams that might end up in the Elite Eight, so we should probably pay attention to a couple of those teams. And also, getting started, it's currently 10:09 West Coast time on Friday when we're recording this. So getting ready to start in about 50 minutes on the women's side of the bracket is the undefeated champion South Carolina Gamecocks playing at home against Presbyterian, the 16 seed on the women's side of the bracket. And we talked on Monday about whether or not it would be easier to prognosticate the men's side of the bracket or the women's side of the bracket, because the top end teams in the women's side of the bracket feel like they're more likely to make it to the Final Four. Like, occasionally you get an 8 seed Miami go to the Elite Eight, or you get an 11 seed make a run to the Elite Eight in the women's tournament, but the Final Four is usually all ones and twos. Like, the women's tournament is very much one of those where if you're one of the top 8 seeds, you end up making it to the Elite Eight more often than I would argue in the men's tournament, where, like, last year, which was a weird example nonetheless, like, last year was a statistical anomaly, but you had a 5 seed San Diego State, you had a, if I remember correctly, a 4 seed Miami, you had a 4 seed UConn, you had a 5 seed Florida Atlantic, or 7, was it an 8 seed Florida Atlantic last year? I don't even remember what it was, but I think it might have been an 8 seeded Florida Atlantic, a 5 seeded San Diego State, a 5 seeded Miami, a 4 seeded UConn. Like, it was wild last year how the bracket ended up breaking down. And in a lot of years, you get an 11 seed like UCLA making it in 2021, or an 11 seed Loyola Chicago make a deep run in the tournament. We don't really have many of those this year on the bracket lines, but it's possible to predict a women's bracket Final Four much easier than it is to predict a men's bracket Final Four, we hypothesized. And I feel validated in my ruling by this point, and I mentioned it earlier. In about an hour, the South Carolina Gamecocks, undefeated, two-time national champions under Don Staley. Last year, they made it to the semifinal with an undefeated regular season. This year, they had an undefeated regular season. South Carolina, as the one seed, is a favorite against Presbyterian by 52.5 points. The highest point spread in the men's side of the bracket, which is UConn as the one seed against Stetson, is currently 27.5. Arizona versus Long Beach, which is the upset that we predicted would happen on our bracket, that was a 20.5 point spread. The 2 versus 15 on the women's side of the bracket between Ohio State and I forgot who Ohio State was playing right now, so apologies to them. But the line that I saw, they're playing Maine, and they're up 22 points in the third quarter. The line going into that game was 38 points, I tell you. So that made me feel vindicated in the fact that either A, the top-end talent in the women's tournament is better than the men's tournament, or B, the bottom-end talent of the women's tournament is just a giant discrepancy of difference between the bottom-end talent of the men's tournament. Like, in the men's tournament, each of the last 3 years, we talked about this, a 15 has beaten a 2 each of the last 3 years. And my hypothesis has been that in the post-pandemic world where the transfer portal has become much more flexible, it's led to a talent dispersal in college basketball. And because of the different styles of play across the different levels of Division I men's college basketball, because of these talent discrepancies, you're going to get a higher probability of upset when, for example, Oakland has a guy who hits 10 three-pointers in a 40-minute college basketball game because all he does is shoot three-pointers. Like, he's on that 2020 Duncan Robinson diet of you exist only to shoot three-pointers. That white dude for Oakland who hit 10 three-pointers and took 20 shots. And I'm pretty sure in the game he made 10 shots, took 20, because he only shot three-pointers. That Oakland team can beat a Kentucky team based on discrepancies in style of play, whereas the talent discrepancy was dramatically in favor of Kentucky. I don't think something like that happens in the women's game, because or as often in the women's game. You traditionally don't see top-end seeds losing. Also, it's not neutral courts. They play these games at their home arenas. One of the things that I thought was interesting, just wanted to bring that up, because South Carolina is a 52.5-point favorite against Presbyterian, and I had to laugh at the idea of South Carolina women being a 52.5-point favorite against Presbyterian. Also, the other thing that we're learning in men's college basketball this year is, like, scoring numbers plummet when you don't make shots, but this year we've seen some, like, dramatic plummeting. Like, I know everyone was bagging on Virginia earlier this week. Virginia been ahead of the curve for as long as I've been watching college basketball. Since I was 9 years old, back in 2010, Virginia's been on this we don't score points game. That's how Virginia runs their entire program, is we play defense and we don't score points. It's aesthetically one of the least interesting forms of basketball. But because this was not a remarkably good Virginia team, a team that maybe shouldn't have been in the tournament, or whatever people want to complain about, people were bagging on Virginia, but then the team that Virginia lost to in the first round, which was Colorado State, ended up putting up three total points in 13 minutes of game time against Texas. With 11 minutes to go in the first half, that score was Colorado State 8, Texas 6, which in and of itself is, woof, a bad college basketball game, 8-6, 9 minutes into the game. But that game was 8-6, and then 3 minutes into the second half, it was Texas 27, Colorado State 11. Colorado State scored 3 points in 13 minutes. As we're recording this right now, we're at halftime of that Northwestern and FAU game, and in a 20-minute basketball game, Northwestern scored 19 points, and Northwestern is losing because Northwestern allowed 20 to FAU. So it's 20-19 at halftime. That's a low-scoring college basketball game. You had a handful of other low scorers that got mixed in yesterday. I'm trying to remember who else was a low score. The Dayton-Nevada game, Nevada ended up scoring 0 points in the final 7.5 minutes of that game to lose, or I think they had 1 point. They had 1 point in the final 7.5 minutes of the game, went from being up 17 to down by 3, and then lost on a last-minute shot, or a last-second shot that was an air ball from one of their players who probably shouldn't have been shooting it, but it was kind of a desperation second-chance shot. But Nevada ends up scoring 1 point in the final 7.5 minutes of that game. They end up getting knocked out of the tournament. Mississippi State scored like 12 points in the second half. Like, there were some down-bad performances from some of those teams, but there were also some freaking awesome ones, like the Oakland dude hitting. And that's the funny thing about college basketball at this point in my life, now that I've watched 10 or 11 men's March Madness tournaments, is that I have seen enough of these to recognize the trends, even if I'm not watching all of these games. Like, in the past, the 11 seeds that used to be the top-end mid-majors, the 11 seeds are now the teams that went on those crazy conference tournament runs, because so many teams were bid thieves in conference tournaments this year, and every single one of them won on the first day. And that was incredibly exciting. I think the three most exciting games, no, I guess Oakland was the most exciting game, but three of the four or five most exciting games so far in the tournament have been 11 seeds beating 6 seeds. NC State whooped up on Texas Tech, but that game was still incredibly exciting because DJ Burns is DJ Burns, and also we're just rooting for our friend Razor Rosenthal and his incredible tournament run. So we've kind of adopted the NC State fandom here. It was incredibly exciting for me. Duquesne and BYU, that game was the most coin tossy of coin toss games that we had all day, which is what we said going into the tournament. It's like, I have no idea what's going to happen in that game. That game probably will go to overtime. And lo and behold, it was the closest point margin of any game on the first day of the tournament. BYU and Duquesne was also the second game of the tournament, so a whole bunch of people got their brackets busted by the second game of the tournament. And then you had Oregon whooping ass against South Carolina, putting up 87 points. That dude for Oregon, forgetting his name now, and I know this is a theme with college basketball where you learn all the names going into the tournament, but dude for Oregon had 40 points to set a school record in an NCAA tournament game. That dude played at South Carolina, transferred to Oregon, went on a miracle run through the Pac-12 tournament to even get to the tournament, because they had to beat Colorado and Arizona to even make the tournament in the first place. My man for Oregon transferred from South Carolina to Oregon, led them on a miracle run to make the tournament, and then dropped a 40-piece on South Carolina in the tournament. Three of the best games of the first day, all of them 11 seeds, all of them winning against underseeded or overseeded 6 seeds. It was wild to watch that happen in real time. And all of those were such cool stories in a way that, like, you kind of recognize the through lines and the trends now, like I was saying. You've watched college basketball enough, you start to recognize some of the through lines and the trends. Because I'm fairly certain all of the 11 seeds are going to win. Like, Clemson plays New Mexico a little bit later on today. It's the Baylor Colgate game is the first one, which, by the way, good luck to all of our teams that we say always make the tournament, never win, because Colgate's playing on Friday, College of Charleston's playing on Friday, Vermont's playing on Friday. Those are the three schools that are known for always making it to the tournament, never winning a game in the tournament. And also, Akron, James Madison, you're building a reputation for whenever one of these teams finally wins, you guys can slide right on into that previously held slot of mid-majors who always make the tournament but never win. James Madison and Akron are building themselves up a reputation for teams who consistently make it to the tournament but never win. Also, New Mexico State used to be in that group before the whole murder within their basketball program thing that kind of derailed their entire basketball program. Hard pivot here. You recognize some of the through lines and trends once you've watched the tournament enough, that the team that won 4 games in 4 days to win their conference tournament, it's probably the team you want to bet on versus a 6 seed who is normally an at-large bid, normally a team that is winning based on some regular season reputation and not necessarily a team that kicked ass at any point during the season. Clemson was the 5 seed in the SEC in the ACC tournament. South Carolina was the 7 seed in the SEC tournament, I believe. They ended up winning by upset in the first round, but they were still the 7 seed in that conference tournament. BYU was, I think, the 6 seed in that conference tournament. I mean, these were pretty unremarkable teams that ended up getting dropped early on in March Madness by teams that won their conference tournaments. Every 11 seed is pulling off a win. And by the way, in a couple of those 11 seed games, it was the expected result. New Mexico hasn't beaten Clemson yet. I hypothesize that by the time a lot of you are listening to this, New Mexico will have beaten Clemson. But New Mexico, according to FPI, which is ESPN's probability for victory metric, New Mexico State has a 57% chance of beating Clemson. The 11 seed is the favorite against Clemson. In that Oregon-South Carolina game, Oregon was favored to beat South Carolina. The 11 beating the 6 is not the upset. It was the expected result in each of those two matchups. We said on Monday when we were getting ready for the tournament, BYU-Duquesne is like the ultimate coin toss game. I have no fucking clue what's going to happen in that game. And lo and behold, it was basically a coin toss game where the 11 seed beat the 6. And then, you know, Texas Tech, NC State, I mean, Texas Tech was the favorite, but they weren't favored by a lot. And by the way, NC State had just beaten, what was it? They beat Duke, they beat Carolina, they beat like five teams in 5 days to win the ACC tournament, came out and beat Texas Tech like it was nothing. And now NC State is going to probably go to the Sweet 16 because they have Oakland in the next round. And it's such a freaking awesome story for NC State to go from longest odds to ever win the ACC championship. 100-1 odds, 10 seed, highest seed to ever win the championship, 100-1 odds, won the conference championship, beat Texas Tech in the first round. Now they get the lucky break of getting to play Oakland in the next round, and NC State looks like they're going to make a run to the Sweet 16, and now they're all of a sudden the Cinderella darlings of an 11 seed who wouldn't have made the tournament unless they get hot at exactly this right time and win 6 games in a row, and will likely win 7 games in a row, because as great as the Oakland upset of Kentucky was in the first place, pretty sure NC State is going to be favored by a good number of points going into that game. And so it was just so interesting to see all the 11s beating the 6s and not have it be a surprise anymore. In such a case that, like, even though I haven't watched a ton of college basketball this year, you jump in the conference tournament, you learn about Oregon winning the Pac-12 championship by beating what are a 7 seed and a 2 seed, or I'm sorry, no, a 10 seed and a 2 seed on consecutive days of the tournament, because they beat 2-seed Arizona, and then they beat 10-seed Colorado in back-to-back days of that conference tournament. You have NC State, who beat, if my math is correct, 3 tournament teams in 3 days between, it was, if my memory serves me correct, they would have beaten the 2-seed in the ACC tournament, which was, I believe, was it Duke, or was it, no, it was, no, it was Duke. They beat Duke, they beat Carolina, and they beat another tournament team. Maybe it was Clemson, who by the way, is a 6-seed in the tournament anyways. So you beat a team that's already on the same line as you. You beat teams that are ranked 4 and 1 on the lines. Like, NC State has already beaten some of these teams. It's not a surprise when they go out and they beat Texas Tech. And it's just interesting to see how in a year where there's so many dramatic upsets, those are the through lines that end up coming through. And it was 3 of the most entertaining games on the first couple days, or I'm sorry, on the first day of the tournament, were the 11 seeds beating up on the 6s. All 3 of them delivered, and I'm sure when we tune into this New Mexico and Clemson game in about 2 hours, that game's going to be a banger as well. And I would suspect that New Mexico State is going to beat Clemson and create a sweep of 11 seeds beating 6 seeds. Which, by the way, we're recording this as the first few games have tipped off here. Baylor, who is the 3 seed in the same group as Clemson and New Mexico, so the winner of Clemson and New Mexico will play Baylor. Baylor's up 17 on Colgate at halftime. Baylor's on pace to score 103 points in the game on Colgate. And I just got to say, Colgate, I love you so much, because every year we know you are going to make the run to the tournament and you are not going to win. I love it for Colgate every year. Shout out to the Patriot League team. I mean, they've been running the Patriot League for years now, but Colgate basketball is always making it to the tournament, never pulling off the victory. Combined record of 0-6 in March Madness. They've made it to March Madness 5 years in a row for Colgate. Colgate has made it to March Madness because they canceled the tournament in 2020. They made it as a 15 seed in 2019, lost to Tennessee. Made it as a 14 seed in 2021, lost to Arkansas. 14 seed in 2022, lost to Wisconsin. 15 seed in 2023, lost to Texas. 14 seed this year, down by 20 at halftime against Baylor. And oh, by the way, Baylor is now on pace to score 106 points against Colgate. Colgate, you are the king of always make it to March Madness, never win. I know Vermont's in this group. I know that, who was the other team? College of Charleston. I know College of Charleston is in this group. Man, y'all are the absolute kings. Absolute kings of March Madness mid-major. Because you never, ever get to be the Cinderella team, but you're always there. I know the Colgate Raiders, like the back of my mind, because they're always winning the Patriot League. They are always showing up as a 14 or a 15 seed and never, ever winning their first round game. We're just waiting desperately for a year. But that's the thing that's dumb about this whole March Madness thing. If you love March Madness over the years, you have teams that become part of this lore. Like New Mexico State used to be this team. New Mexico State won, I think, 4 or 5 consecutive WAC championships. And I'm pretty sure they did not win a single game in March Madness during the 2010s. And then Vermont kind of took the mantle from them. Vermont made it in 2017, 2019, 2021, 2023, 2024. Vermont's made it like 5 times now. And if and when they lose to Duke this year in the tournament, it's going to be 5 years in a row that Vermont doesn't win that conference championship. And I think it's so cool that teams in this mid-major realm are able to build continuously successful teams like Colgate, like Vermont, like College of Charleston. Teams that exist within this mid-major space are able to build programs in which players consistently play in those programs. I'm betting that a lot of these schools bring in players who otherwise, in a pre-transfer portal era, would have been sitting on the benches in other places. And so from this crop of talent that is not going to go to the NBA, might end up playing overseas in other leagues like in Taiwan and in Turkey and in the Euro League for the best of the best, that of this group of talent that is not the top 500 who are going to make it to the NBA and is not competing in the same NIL spaces as other schools, I think it's so interesting how those schools always end up finding ways to compete within the margins. They build programs able to compete year in and year out at the mid-major level when the only goal they are playing for is to get this one and maybe two games in March Madness on this Friday morning at 10:30 a.m., but every year, once a year, for a couple hours a day, Colgate University from Hamilton, New York, in the Patriot League, gets to have their representation and their day of being on national television. Heck, I'm pretty sure that game is on what? Oh, that's True TV. So they get to play on True TV at 10 o'clock a.m. Friday morning every year. And every year we get to talk about Colgate for just a quick moment, or we get to talk about the Vermont Catamounts from the American East Conference. And if you're in this weird kind of subculture of March Madness excitement, like we are, weirdly enough, every year, you get to remember teams like Vermont, you get to remember teams like Colgate, and you get to remember New Mexico State, who for so many years I picked to win first round matchups, so many 13 seeds, so many 12 seeds, never ended up winning. Vermont, same thing. So many 13s, so many 12s, so many 15 seeds, never once get it done. But now you know to pick against them. This year we picked against Colgate, we picked against Vermont, and we picked against College of Charleston. And those three teams might end up finally getting it done. And like I said, Akron, Grand Canyon, you're some of the teams that we start to remember now because you've made it 2 or 3 times. But the times that they do eventually get it done, we're going to be so excited for you and so excited to be wrong. If College of Charleston could pull the upset against Alabama, we're going to be so happy for you. If Colgate comes back from 20 points down to pull off the 100-98 upset against Baylor, we're going to be so goddamn happy for you. If Grand Canyon beats St. Mary's, we won't be happy for you, but you will have broken the trend of 3 seasons of making it the tournament without ever winning your first round game. We definitely won't be happy for Christian Capitalist University at Grand Canyon, but we will still very much point out that you broke your through line and you avoided joining this illustrious class of Charleston and Vermont and our guys down at Colgate, who are down 20 at halftime against Baylor. You get to be part of this long and illustrious tradition of teams that we know are going to be here in March Madness every year and are pleasantly surprised when we remember your name every single year. Anyways, just wanted to get that one off my back because I saw Colgate was playing against Baylor right there, and it reminded me of the teams that always make it to March Madness but never ever win their first round game. Just wanted to go on that little rant because we love those teams that always make it to March Madness but will never ever win a game. What else do we want to talk about here before we sign off and get ready for San Diego State versus UAB and Western Kentucky versus Marquette on the Friday of March Madness? Northwestern's winning by, was it 4 points now? Okay. Northwestern was the one where I just picked FAU because FAU made the Final Four last year, but it's an 8-9 game. It's kind of random. No one really knows what's going to happen in either of those games. Northwestern might end up winning that game, might end up losing that game. It's all pretty random anyways. That Samford game yesterday. That Samford game was awesome because the whole way through it was the last game of the night. And I remember one year, I believe it was Wofford, was playing the last game of the night. And Wofford, I think it was Wofford and Clemson, and it was like both South Carolina teams were playing against each other, and it was the last game of the night, and it was going past 10 o'clock, and it was on the Thursday of March Madness, and I had school the next day, and I really, really, really wanted to stay up to watch Wofford and Clemson. And the game was not interesting at all, but I made it through the day so that I could say that we watched all 12 hours of March Madness from school, from getting home after school, popping on the games, watching all the games, 16 in one day, super duper March Madness involved. Didn't have a podcast back then, but this was where the joys of college basketball during the March Madness ended up starting for me, and where a lot of that excitement and engagement around that sport ended up beginning some of those, like, when you're young, you get very, very excited about sports. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm old because I'm 22 and this is our fifth year doing a podcast, but like some of that excitement you get around sports when you're younger about the idea of just, you know how like you hear kids who are going to watch college basketball on their computers during school on the Thursday and Friday of March Madness. That was me, and that like excitement, that adrenaline rush you got from watching college basketball while you were in class on Thursday and Friday of March Madness kind of start to fester that love because you feel like you're engaged with sports in a way that feels unique. It makes you feel like you want to do this every year, even if you aren't as excited as you were when you were 15 years old, but you're still engaged in it in ways that started when you were younger. I say all of that to say, that was a long-winded way of getting to what I wanted to talk about. The thing that I wanted to talk about was the last game of the day is always difficult to decide whether or not to keep watching or to go to bed. Because Kansas was up by 17 against Samford. And Samford started coming back bit by bit by bit. And you kind of had to make a tough call between do I say yes to watching the end of this Samford and Kansas game, or do I go do something else at the end of 12 hours of watching college basketball? And I made the call to stick with Samford and Kansas, and it did not disappoint because you had the whole controversy that I'm sure some people on the East Coast woke up to because that game finished at about 1 a.m. Eastern time. But if you're on the West Coast and it's 10 o'clock, you got to see Samford block a Kansas dunk cleanly in a one-point game with 12 seconds to go, have it get whistled for a foul, Kansas hitting two free throws to go up three, Samford missing their three-point attempt with 10 seconds to go, and then that being the end of Samford's season, even though they should have gotten at least a chance to shoot a two instead of a three-pointer at the end of that game. But you know what? This year, I'm glad that I stayed up for the Thursday of March Madness. I am glad that we stayed up, and it makes it easier that we work a job where we work a lot of nights. So actually, we worked during the day yesterday, but a job where we work a lot of nights makes it easier because it's not like I had to wake up and go to work like a lot of other people do. I just woke up, grabbed a microphone, and started recording this stupid podcast instead of going to work the next day. But when you were going to school or going to work or whatever it was, you kind of had to make some tough decisions about whether or not you were going to stay up for the late game or not during March Madness. And I'm glad I did, because you got the Samford versus Kansas dramatic endgame that ended up, the dramatic end to Samford versus Kansas that ended up creating a whole bunch of controversy, because a mid-major got to feel like in their first, the first time in a quarter century that they had ever made it to March Madness, they felt like they didn't get a fair crack at a comeback. And that'll be something that I'm sure for all the people in Samford, they end up holding on to for years and years and years, unless they become the next Colgate, or they become the next College of Charleston, or they become the next Vermont, and they end up making the tournament every year for the next 4 years. And maybe, just maybe, they can be the 13 seed, or they can be the 14 seed that ends up pulling off an upset in round one that makes us remember that team forever and ever in the lores of mid-major college basketball, just like the Oakland Golden Grizzlies, who I think like 7 or 8 years ago had a player who set the NCAA's all-time scoring record. I don't think he ended up having a giant, I don't think he ended up having a crazy NBA career. But he ended up having, I'm trying to remember what his name was now. God, I hate that I can't remember the guy who played for Oakland, who was absolute, oh, Kay Felder, that's who it was. They had Kay Felder, who, Oakland should have made the tournament 1 year, and they lost late in their conference tournament to someone in the Horizon League. But Kay Felder was the dude who was out here cooking in the Horizon League. He was a 5'9" dude. He was like, he was like a one of these short king heroes, like Max Abrams, the guy for Oral Roberts, who was like 5'10" and out here cooking dudes. Kay Felder years ago was out here cooking for Oakland, and Oakland was the number one seed in their conference tournament, and they lost. And it's, even though he was the Horizon League Player of the Year, and they were supposed to be like on the 12 line going into March Madness, and this was 2016, so this was my peak interest in college basketball and watching these conference tournaments. And then Oakland lost in their conference tournament, and Kay Felder never got a chance to be a March Madness hero. But now Oakland, 8 years later, gets to be the March Madness Cinderella darlings who knocked out Kentucky and Coach Calipari, which, by the way, I'm curious to hear what Lexington Sports Radio sounds like today. That's going to be a fucking all-timer of a day for the, that's going to be an all-timer of a day for Lexington Sports Radio, because they are stuck with Calipari and they are pissed off. They were already upset with him going into this tournament. The fact that they ended up losing to Oakland, which was entirely predictable because they were one of the most sporadic teams in college basketball this year, from what I understand. Of course, I didn't watch Kentucky play, but from what I understand, they were one of the most sporadic teams in college basketball this year, which is why we predicted that upset. So I can say, as someone who watched zero Kentucky basketball and someone who picked Oakland to beat Kentucky in their bracket, as a college basketball expert who prognosticated the NC State versus Oakland second round matchup, I can say with confidence in my expert opinion that Kentucky fans are fucking pissed. That's my expert opinion. Kentucky fans are fucking pissed today. And I am curious what sports talk radio in Lexington sounded like this morning. Because it might have been like the day after the Boston Bruins lost as a 1 seed to an 8 seed, or like the day after the Boston Red Sox get eliminated from the playoffs, or the day that the Boston Red Sox traded Mookie Betts. Like, I don't know what exactly all of that sounded like, but I imagine it was a shit show out there in Kentucky sports radio this morning. Who knows? I'm sure we'll hear more about it once they inevitably decide to bring Coach Cal back for another season. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy podcast March Madness Bracket Breakdown. It's our March Madness watch party. We'll have another one of these coming up this weekend, so be on the lookout for some more college basketball coverage here from our wonderful and wacky Take It Easy podcast. Thank you, everybody, for stopping in today. We so greatly, greatly appreciate you joining us. As always, leave downloads, 5-star reviews. Any and all support is greatly, greatly appreciated. We will be chatting with you this weekend, talking college hoops. Stay on the lookout for more Take It Easy podcast content. And in the meantime, we got 3 more episodes available for you in the past. Go check out Monday's March Madness Bracket Breakdown. Go check out Wednesday's Razor Rosenthal March Madness Bracket Breakdown. We got all sorts of great content coming at you. Enjoy the games, and as always, take it easy.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.